Tonight I want to talk to you about the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash. Last year, the Rav Minsky Rebbe asked me to start a new series on Emunah and Bitachon. Last year, I worked with the BBC in England, put together a film called The Story of Tisha B'Av. I have a few copies here if anyone wants it. And this story shows you we got actors in England to play the parts of Titus and Aspasianus. We took together every Maimon Chazal. We took together Yosefin. We took together Medrash Eicha. And we put together the story of Ba'isheni. So I sat with the Rav Minsky Rebbe last week in his bungalow in Liberty. And I told him that I'm about to release the story of Ba'is Rishon. 99% of people who go to shul for the time and sit in shul on Tisha B'Av, they only know one story. It's called Kamsa Bar Kamsa. They don't know the story of Tisha B'Av. So this film hopefully will show your kids and you, if you have nothing to do during Tisha B'Av, to actually watch it and to see what is the story of Ba'is Sheni. Tonight I'm going to talk to you about Ba'is Sheni. There was a mistake on the graphics department. We rushed it last year. It said Ba'is Rishon, but the disc here is actually Ba'is Sheni. Tomorrow I'm giving out Ba'is Rishon. And that's what I'm going to be talking to you about tonight. So, in order to understand Ba'is Rishon, we have to understand certain politics of the world, and then we'll get to what happened with the Eden. Politics of the world we're going to begin is that there were superpowers. And the superpower at that time was Asher. Asher, Assyria, was a very big country. Asher was a country that was based, what we know, a part of Turkey today and part of Iran today. Asher expanded its kingdom, and throughout Ba'is Rishon, it got stronger and stronger until the point that it came to Eretz Yisrael, Sancheriv, and all the different Aseres HaShvatim who were Nigla into Golos, were through Malchus Asher. Then there became a war. The war was a rising power called Bavel, and Asher were now fighting for control. Now, why would people want to conquer countries? Because you got taxes. Everybody would pay you taxes on a yearly basis for all the different countries you conquered. And by conquering them, you continuously grow your tax base. So Yidden were paying taxes to Malchus Asher. Along comes Bavel and has a huge war together with Asher. And who's the victor of the war? Bavel. The king of Bavel at that time is a man named Nabonidus. And Nabonidus is the father of Nabopolassar is the king of Bavel. His son, his Bechor, is a man named Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar is this master general for his father. He's controlling the whole wars. And they write a letter to Jehoiakim, king of Yehuda, and say, listen, we're the new show in town. Pay us taxes. Jehoiakim is a guy who Chazal say, let's not say he was the most honorable person in the world. He used to do terrible things. And Jehoiakim goes ahead and makes a revolt against Nebuchadnezzar and Nabopolassar. Shaloi Bertzon Yirmiyah HaNavi, and not what the Chachamim want. So Yirmiyah HaNavi sits down and writes Megillas Eicha. And what does Jehoiakim do? He throws it into the fire. He burns Megillas Eicha. How do we have Megillas Eicha today? We have it only because his student Baruch Ben Aryeh rewrote Megillas Eicha while Yirmiyah HaNavi is in prison. You didn't like the messenger? You killed him. You threw him in jail. That's what people did. And now, Jehoiakim makes this revolt against Nebuchadnezzar. And during this revolt, he dies. Now, in that time, to get an army together and march them all to Eretz Yisrael, it took a couple of months. So what happens in the meantime? His 18-year-old son, Yechaniah, becomes king. And he's king only for a few months. Nebuchadnezzar shows up to the walls of Yerushalayim. We know it happened in the month of Adar. We did not know the date. And he says to him, he gives him an ultimatum. Tomorrow morning, either you go into Golus with the leadership who caused this whole big revolt, or I'm going to destroy Yerushalayim tomorrow morning. The next morning, Yechonya with Mordechai, Yecheskel, Daniel, Hananya, Mishael, Vazaria, 3,500 Yidden in leadership positions all leave and go into Golus Yechonya 11 years before the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. He takes, Nebuchadnezzar takes Yechonya's uncle, the brother of Yehoyakim, Masniyo, and he gives him a new name called Tzidkiyahu. And he says to him, listen, you're an older guy, you have a little seichel, you're going to be the king, pay me taxes, and I'm going to let you be king. As soon as Nebuchadnezzar leaves, right away the Nevi'ei Sheker starts saying, we can break away from Babel. We don't need to be under their yoke. It's okay. We'll be fine. And the result is that there becomes a debate in Klal Yisrael. Do we listen to Yirmiyah or do we listen to the Nevi'ei Sheker? Nationalism. People want to be independent is a strong force. But Yirmiyah Navi says that's not what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. Micha HaNavi says, if you're going to fight against them, Tzion Kisode Ticharesh, Yerushalayim will be plowed like a field. We're going to talk soon that came true. And I'll show you how. But Yirmiyah is in the minority. Because it's much more fascinating for people to say, we're going to fight the Roman, we're going to fight the Babylonians. And what happens? What happens is the Yidden decide to make a second revolt. Nebuchadnezzar comes back again to Yerushalayim. And this time he destroys Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash. But he doesn't want the Yidden to have to leave Eretz Yisrael. Stay there, no more kings, I will appoint a governor, he's going to be in charge. What's the difference of a governor and a king? A king can kill people, he runs it in the back. A governor, he has to follow the laws of Babel. That's the difference of a governor and a king. Gedaliah ben Achikam is going to be your governor, and that's it, but you can stay in Eretz Yisrael. There's a man named Yishmael ben Hassanya. And this guy, Yishmael ben Hassanya, is Mimalchus Beis David. Chutzpah! You are going to have a self-hating Jew who's going to be a governor for Babel? So he goes to Amman Jordan. Amoin, the name survived till today. He goes to Amman Jordan, to Amoin. And the king of Amoin is a man named Balusha Melech Bnei Amoin. Balus, the king of Amoin. And he says to him, listen, we can work together and we'll make a revolt, throw the Babylonians out, and we'll rule Eretz Yisrael. And what does Balachan Amin want from Yishmael ben Asaiah? Tell me what to do. And Yishmael ben Asaiah is going to become king. He's Mimalchus Beis David. So they plot the assassination of Gedaliah 12 years ago in Amman, Jordan. Archaeologists are clearing a road and they find the palace of Balus. And in it they found his seal in my museum. Is an impression from the seal of Balusa Melech Bnei Amon, the man who ordered the assassination of Gedaliah. And on Rosh Hashanah, they go and assassinate Gedaliah. And when this happens, Nebuchadnezzar hears about it, he says, that's it, I'm coming back again to Yerushalayim. Now every Jew has to leave Eretz Yisrael. Why is Son Gedaliah a fast that was established with Doris? Because this was a turning point that Yidden had to leave Eretz Yisrael. Al Narois Bavel Shom Yashavnu Gam Bechinu happened now, when Yidden had to leave Eretz Yisrael. And that's why this was established as a Tinus. So the Yidden are taken. The Babylonians have a very interesting system. Old people kill them. No use. Like the Germans. Young people, we could sell them as slaves. They could work for us. Those are people we'll take. The only people who are allowed to stay in Eretz Yisrael are the people not to make tchelis. Why? Because Nebuchadnezzar needs tchelis for himself. Tchelis was called Big Day Malchus. Mordechai Yatza Bilvush Malchus Tchelis Bechor. This was tchelis. And therefore, that was allowed. And when this happens, a major turning point happens. You didn't have to leave, and it's gone. Now, when the second time Nebuchadnezzar came, and he killed the two sons of Tzidkiyahu in front of his eyes, and he says to him, "What did Yirmiyahu Nabi say? Am I going to kill you or not?" He said, "No, I'm going to be your slave." So he says, "Watch, this is the last thing you're ever going to see." And they take coals. They burn his eyes out. This was what Yirmiyahu Nabi warned. We have a few people who are living on this symbol. Their name is Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The Babylonians have an interesting system. We control so many different countries. Let's take young people, let's train them in the palace, and then eventually they'll go back to their local countries and they'll know how to be a melech, they'll know how to be a minister. So we're going to train them in our palace. So we're going to take from Evi Shevet some people. We're going to take Hananiah, we're going to take Daniel, we'll give him a new Babylonian name, Belshazzar, not Belshazzar, he was called Belshazzar. And each one got his own name. You are going to be our palace dignitaries from Judea, from Yehuda. How did they avoid eating all the food? The famous stories. They started eating and they told the guy who was in charge, if we eat vegetables and we'll see that our faces didn't change and we don't lose our strength, everything, they're going along and everything's working okay with Nissan for them. And then Nebuchadnezzar erects a huge statue of himself that everyone has to bow to. And this is a very, very fundamental point. Nebuchadnezzar's name is not Nebuchadnezzar and not Nebuchadrezzar. His name is Nabucodonosor. I have an inscription in my museum with his name on it. This is a translation of the inscription. So why did we change his name? So Mefarshim say Nebuchadrezzar because he was a Ritzayah. He used to kill people at will. He didn't like you, grabbed a sword, he stabbed the person to death. So why were they Mishan his name? Because he was an Oyvid Avodah Zarah, and he made people bow to him. Since he made himself into Avodah Zarah, we don't say the name of Avodah Zarah itself. I'm allowed to say it, Derech Lima, that's why I say it. But his actual name was different than what we pronounce it. You know, in Europe, no Jew ever said out of their mouth the word Satmar. Satmar, no one ever said Satmar, because Satmar, the town, was named for Santa Maria, the mother of Oysa-ish. So now, the Satmar Rebbetzin came to my museum a few years ago. I asked her, how come Satmar today says Satmar? And she said to me, my Shver told me that today nobody associates Satmar with the mother of Oysa-ish. She's lost the association. That's why you're allowed to say it today. That's what the Satmar Rebbetzin told me. Rabbi Aaron's wife. So this is here, there was an association of Avodah Zarah. So you couldn't say it. And that's why we change it a little bit. Now, what's very interesting that happens here is as follows. He erects the statue. Everyone has to bow. Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah are not bowing. So what does he do? He takes them and says they have to be thrown in the Kibshe Shalesh. So he heats up the fire 7 times what it's usual. And they throw them in and their bodies don't get scorched, not even a hair on their head. And Nebuchadnezzar sees this, and he's completely taken by this. And he says, anyone who touches them, anyone who does anything to them, I will personally kill them. So now they have protection from Nebuchadnezzar himself. And then Nebuchadnezzar goes to sleep and has a dream. And it becomes known as the famous dream. The first dream of Nebuchadnezzar, he wakes up in the middle of the night, and he wakes up all his ministers. And he says to me, tell me what my dream was and what it means. The minister says, tell us the dream and we'll tell you what it means. Tell me what my dream was and what it means. And if not, by morning, every one of you are going to be dead. All his big advisors, Kishev, Machas, all of them together. Daniel hears this. And Daniel asks to come in front of Nebuchadnezzar. He comes in front of him and he says, listen, I heard about your decree. I need to daven to Hashem, and I'll tell you what it means, but I need a little more time. It's the middle of the night. It's a royal decree. By morning, the only thing I'll do for you is I'll line up all the ministers at daybreak. So you have a little extra time between Alois HaShachar and Netzach HaMa, but if when you come, you don't tell me, they're all dead, including you. Vayispalel Daniel al Hashem. Daniel goes and davens to Hashem. And the Eibishter reveals to Daniel what is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And at morning, as the sun begins to rise, Nebuchadnezzar stands waiting to hear, and Daniel walks in and says, Hashem has revealed to me what your dream was. In your dream, you see this big statue with a head of gold, a body of silver, arms and legs of Nechoshes, toes and feet that are mixed between Nechoshes and pottery. And Nebuchadnezzar gets up the Medrash says, out of his throne, he says, this man just repeated it as if he just saw my dream. What does it mean? And Daniel turns to Nebuchadnezzar and he says to him, I want to make an agreement with you. I'll only tell you positive things. But if you insist that I tell you a negative thing, then you have to say you insist. But don't ask me to say something that's negative if you don't want to hear it. And this, he makes this agreement. Chedasa, tell me what it means. He says, the head of gold is you. And after you is going to come silver. And there's going to be a Yerida, until the whole kingdoms are going to fall. And he lists out what the kingdoms are. And then he says, Nebuchadnezzar says to him, is there a man in my kingdom as wise as this man who I can trust? Daniel, you are the governor of Babylon. Daniel is made governor of Babylon. British Museum has an inscription, Belshazzar, governor of Babylon. My friends, this is Daniel. In my new film, you're going to see the inscription of Daniel from his ring. I was waiting a whole day today for a copyright thing for the British Museum. I hope it came through, but if not, I'll have to pick it out. But we're waiting for a whole day for it. It's an amazing inscription from Daniel. A document signed by the Ring of Daniel. Belshazzar, governor of Persia, of Babylon. Now he's governor, and then Nebuchadnezzar has his second dream. What's the second dream? In his dream, he sees this massive tree as big as the whole world. And it goes up till the sky, and all the birds and animals are living under this tree. And then he sees from heaven a big rock comes and smashes this tree, destroys the tree, and all that's left is the roots of the tree. Nebuchadnezzar wakes up and says to Daniel, tell me, what's this dream? And Daniel says, the tree is you, Nebuchadnezzar. Hashem is showing you that you have become this provider of all these different countries of the world. But your gaiva is going to destroy you. And Hashem is going to send the Malach Hashem to destroy you. He's going to knock down your tree, but you won't die. You will roam like an animal in the fields until you raise your head up to the Shamayim. And you are makir that everything comes from Hashem. Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, I advise you, watch your words. Don't talk in very glowing terms about yourself. A year goes by. And Nebuchadnezzar was major into construction. He wanted his city of Babel to be biggest, and the biggest building is in the nicest city. And the Medrash says he's standing on the roof of his palace on a balcony. And he's looking out at his city and he's talking to one of his ministers. And he looks out and he says to his minister, is there anyone in the world who has ever built such a magnificent city as I built? The words were still on his lips, and Yatsa Baskel min hashamayim. A Baskel comes out min hashamayim and says, Nebuchadnezzar, get off your throne, put down your crown, and now you're going to roam the animal like an animal in the field. Nebuchadnezzar takes off like he's in a state of hypnosis. He takes off his royal clothes and he starts wandering through the fields of his own kingdom. For 7 years he roamed his kingdom. He ate pieces of stalks of food between animals. In this film, we actually got an actor to play the part. It's unbelievable. Kids see it. I showed it to a group of kids yesterday, and they were like, they didn't know, they couldn't get out of their seat. And finally, he's crawling on the fields, and he looks and he picks up his head to Shemayim. And he says, Rabbeinu Shalaylam, everything comes from you. And as he's talking, he rises up onto his feet. And he starts talking praise to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And the Eibishter says, now is the time for you to go back to your palace. And Nebuchadnezzar goes back to his palace. And he assumes his throne again. And he makes a decree that anybody who speaks against Hashem will be killed immediately. And Nebuchadnezzar becomes king for 40 years. And if you stop and listen to this story that I just told you, think about this for a moment. The Eibishter took the biggest Baal Gaiva in the world. The Eibishter took a person who made himself into an Avodah Zarah and said, I'm going to make you like an animal in the field until you will pick up your head and say, it's all from the Rabbeinu Shalom. If the Eibishter can do that to Nebuchadnezzar Melo Bava, what does a Yid have to take from this story? What does a Yid have to take about Koichi Va'oitzim Yadi versus everything coming from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? To be Makir Toiv to Hashem. Titus, he thought also he was a big man. And the Eibishter took the smallest Yitush, the smallest fly, flew into his nose, ate away at his brain, until, as I think I showed you last year, this Yitush came so big, most people say like a bird, and it's a mistake. It was not like a bird. It's Machloikis in the Gemara. What's the Machloikis? The size of Shnei Sloim, that the Yitush became the size of these two coins, or Kishnei Litrim. There's a measurement called a litra, two of these. So this is the machloikis in the Gemara, Kishnei Sloim or Kishnei Litra. This is what they argue. And these were standard sizes. This is what people did. Only one picture has ever survived from the second Beis HaMikdash. It was minted on a coin. This is a coin that was minted by Shimon Bar Kochba. And this is a picture of the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. You can pass it around to everybody. And it's an amazing coin because it shows on one side the Heichal, on the other side it shows the Lulav and the Esrei. Now why is that important? Because Rabbi Akiva saw the Charvin and he lived in the time of Bar Kochba. And Rabbi Akiva held that a Lulav should have one Hadassah and one Merav. And if you look at the back of the coin, he made the coin Keshitas Rabbi Akiva on a Lulav with one Hadassah, one Merav. Rabbi Akiva thought he was Mashiach, so he made something like his shita. I brought you today also to see a whole other thing, because we have a few minutes. How much time do we have left?
We have time.
Okay. So I want to show you a lot of misconceptions that people have about the Beis HaMikdash and what they really are. For example, if you ask the average person, is a woman allowed to shech karbonis? And they'll tell you no. But the answer is she's allowed to. What? Taisa Chul. First Taisa Chul. Shach and Shulchan Aruch. Chil Teshkita. That's right. You say correct. That's right. What he's saying is correct. So if women are allowed to shecht, hakol shecht, the chutz from the shecharis shecht to the garden, why don't women shecht today? So the shecht writes in Shulchan Aruch, what? Oh. The women don't know the halach as well. They don't also know the mitzvah as well. And therefore today they shouldn't shecht. Make a long story short. Hey Chatim, so what's going to happen if there's going to be a kehila that has no man shaykhet? And a woman comes to the bezdin of that country and she shows she knows how to shecht. Is she allowed to shecht? Shach says yes. And this happened in Florence, Italy, 1931. There's no men shaykhet. A daughter of a very famous rabbi comes in front of the bezdin and she proves that she knows how to shecht and she knows the halachas. Physically, she knows to do it. And this is the Ksav HaKabbalah they gave for a woman shechet. And it says here in Italian, translated in Hebrew on the other side, only if there are no men shechetim, this was her shechita knife. Look at the handle. It's made from the hand of a woman. And this was her sharpening stone. I get a catalog in the mail 2 years ago from a Jewish auction house, and they're selling this as an auction. Now, I'm an enikel of the Shach and Shulchan Aruch, so I wanted to buy this because it's a very unique thing to see a woman shaykhet who got, when the man does not exactly what the Shach writes. So I go to the auction, and a lot of people are bidding on this, and the auction catalog said this should sell for about $1,000 to $1,500. I decided whatever it's going for, I'm going to buy it. Kitzur HaMaaseh, it goes for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $3,500, it's up to $4,000. And finally the auctioneer walks off the stage in the middle of the auction and he whispers into my ear, he says, "You see that lady standing behind you bidding against you?" I said, "Who is that?" He said, "You remember Avi Weiss gave smicha to a woman a few years ago and called her the rapa? She's bidding against you. $10,000 I said. I went to the hack once and for all. Because I realized that this woman wants to buy this shechita knife and wants to buy the stone and then wants to make a news conference. Listen, I am starting the women to shecht. Why? So the cover of the shecht and shulchan aruch, I said, it's worth $10,000. So this is the story of this knife with this case, with this specific thing. So this is a very important halacha to shechita. Now, the next thing that's important that I brought you to see is something which is very negeya because all the picture books have it wrong.
The question is Yerushalmi on Kachem. Bring a ride. There is a Yerushalmi on
Kachem. There is a Yerushalmi on Kachem, but not the fake Yerushalmi that was given out by Leopold Greenwald and that the fake Yerushalmi. I was in the Vatican library and I saw there is fragment leaves of a what we consider to be the Yerushalmi on Kachem. It didn't survive in Masechtos, but there are certain leaves that are existent that is definitely part of the Yerushalmi on Kachem. Yeah. Certain people had it, and the Chida writes that he had pieces of it. In Maglot Tzedek, he writes about it, so they're, we know from different sources that they did exist. One of the mistakes that all the picture books about Karbanos have is the Mizrak. To be Mekabel the Dam of a carbon, all the picture books make an ice cream cone-shaped keli with a handle at the edge. Now, I have to tell you that I was dyslexic as a child. I couldn't read straight. Until 12 years old, I could not read. So I had to visualize everything, and that's why I made a museum eventually, because you have to see it. So I'm sitting in class and trying to think, if you shecht, I've watched shechita, there's a lot of blood going all over. So if a kohen takes his arm and puts to be mekabel dam, he's going to get stained all over his clothing. And you can't wear a stained garment. So I raised my hand in class, I asked, Rebbe, it doesn't make sense that the mizrak looked like this. And I got slapped up and thrown out of class for asking such kind of questions. And basically, I found out that I was right. Because any one of you can walk over to your Svarim Shachar and pull out a Chumash Mikrois Gedolos and go to the Parshas HaNasiim and look under when it says Kaf Achas Asora Zov Meleik Teres, and it says Mizrak Echot, the Targum Yerushalmi, Unkelus, as well as Rabbi Yonasan Ben Uziel, all three wrote Feli the Chaspa, Feli of silver. In Greek, the name of this Keli is called a Fiali. Now, it came with two kinds of bumps. A bump on the inside, or I have this miniature that the bump goes out on the outside. The kind that the Chazal were talking about is the one with the bump on the outside. Now, a Mizrak was not an ice cream cone, it was a plate. And if you ask me, prove it to me, there's a Safri. The Safri says on that pasuk, Karas Kesef Achas Mizrak Echad, they're both plates, Karas. What's the difference between a Kara and a Mizrak? How thick the walls of the Keli were. So the Mizrak had a protrusion like a pot cover sticking on the outside. Now, if you try to put down a pot cover, it doesn't sit. So when the Gemara talks Bechdei Shelo Yikrash Hadam, it's talking about this kind of a Keli. So this is called the Mizrak.
How does he mix it though so it doesn't congeal? Oh, his finger inside.
Now, there's another keli used for karbanis. It's called a magus. If you say Seder Karpesa, you talk about a magus. In classical Greek pottery, this is called a magus. You take your finger, you stick it into the bump like this, you hold it like this, and by Korban Pesach, they would take the ankoilios, they would take the hooks. These would be hung on the walls. This is a 2,000-year-old meat hook that was found in a shipwreck. They would hang it and take out the parts, the shtei hakloyos, the yisera shalakovit, and they would put it into the magus. This would be taken to the mizbeach. So this is called an ankoilia, ankoilios hooks. This is called your mizrak. This is called your magus. Now, there was one other very important thing. It's called a kupitz. Kupitz in Roman Latin means knife. Now, you can have a fruit knife, you can have a meat cleaver, you can have many different types of knives. Look at the handle. There's a hole. What does the Gemara say? You could put it on a ring, and you can carry your kupitz. Erev Pesach, you're walking in the street, and you drop your kupitz. Somebody else comes along and picks it up. Is he Tame or Tar? Tar, why?
Because
no Jew would walk in the streets of Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach with a Tame Kupitz. So by Karba Chagiga, we talk about a Kupitz. This is the kind of thing. By, if you have a meat carving knife, we have anyone in the butcher business here?
No?
So this is your meat carving knife. 2,000-year-old meat knife.
The meat hook hasn't changed the drip.
The meat hook hasn't changed. That's called Ein Kol Chadash Tachas HaShemesh. It's the same kind. But you see all the oxidation of the metal from going through 2,000 years.
They didn't have the Board of Health cleaning.
That's right. I want to show you another thing about the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. We found the Machta. This is like you have a fireplace and you have one of your shovels. These were standard issued items that people would use. Any hardware store would have one of these. This one is beautiful because it has an Ionic column design on the handle. You could see the white coral from sitting under the water for 2,000 years still attached. And now I'm going to show you the Avodah of Yom Kippur. The Kohen would have a much longer handle than this. He would hold it like that. In one hand, he had to balance the Keteris. And this was his kaf, this was his spoon. Now I asked my Rebbe as a kid, the word kaf means a spoon and kaf also means the palm of your hand. Is there an association between the two? My Rebbe said he didn't know, but when I found about antiquities, the ancient spoons were all in the shape of your hands. They were very decorative. So when they said kaf, they made it like a hand. When they said the oizen of a kalim, they made them like ears. The raglayim of a kelim, they made them with feet. And I have in my museum many such kelim. The yad, they made physical hands. So this over here shows you how this would be done as far as that's concerned. And finally, I do want to show you something that's really unique. The menorah had prachim of zavtar, flowers of pure gold. And this is part was found in the sea, and it's part of an ancient dress. These were flowers that they would sew onto their dresses. You have two holes on every single one of these flowers. Rabik gave a whole shiur in our museum. If you have a beged that has gold attachments to it, what's the ikker and what's the tuffel? Do you say the gold is so expensive as a din of the ikker or not? Now what's very important is the menorah had prachim, had flowers of zavtar. I could take this pure gold, it's 24 karat gold, and bend it with my fingers like paper. So when kids learn about zavtar, I'm giving out a new film now. Kids don't know what's the difference of 14 karat gold, 18 karat, 22, or 24. 14 karat has 14 parts gold, 10 parts other metals. 18 is 6 and 18 parts full gold. So this shows them how this would be done as well. Okay, any questions? I left the last few minutes for any questions you may have about the Beis HaMikdash, Churban Bayis Rishon, or Churban.
When you were in the Vatican, did you see the artifacts from the second Beis HaMikdash?
Okay, so let me address that. The answer is that the Vatican does not have any kelim of the Beis HaMikdash for three reasons. Most people say that the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash are kept in the catacombs of the Vatican. That would be like you say, I have my treasure stored in the basements in Miami Beach. What's the problem with that? The water level is so high you can't have any basements. The Vatican is built on a water table that doesn't allow it to have any basements. Now, why do people say Vatican? Because the Vatican is Rome. But the Vatican didn't come to power until 300 years after Rome was destroyed. We know that when Rome was destroyed by the different tribes, that the kelim of everything were kept in a building called the Temple of Peace. Temple of Peace was a museum, like the Metropolitan Museum in Manhattan, that shows the treasures of all the things. Rome had a museum that showed all the treasures of its victories of different countries. We know the kelim were kept there. When Rav Elazar says, Hayisi b'roimi v'ra'isi esatzit, we know he went there, because it was on public display. That building was destroyed and it was sacked by these tribes. Everything was taken back to Turkey. I had a long conversation with Rabbi Yashin, because we have an idea in Turkey where these things are. And the conclusion is that it's even if these are the real caliph that the Romans conquered, it's better to be in the hands of a guy than to be in the hands of a Jew. Because for you, this is Asurbano. There is one difference. If something was destroyed, it has no din of Ano. Isurano. This Gemara in Charis Tafnunam and Alf, the Gemara says, Bo Pritzin V'chalalu. The Gemara learns out, something is destroyed. So I brought you here something from the Beis HaMikdash. And there's no din Kedusha for me. If you go to the Koysel today, the Koysel is not the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, it's the wall around Har HaBayis. 1972, they're excavating the southern wall, and they found this stone. The Israeli government gave it to me as a gift. Look at the shape of this stone. The shape of the stone is called Herodian stone, because Hordas originally made these stones. He wanted to put gold around it, and the center should be stone. Le'nocho chacham, the chacham didn't want. Now, these stones were made of limestone, avnei sit. What did the Romans do by the Churban? They took torches, avuka shalesh, and they stuck them between the stones. Limestone heats up, it's a combustionable stone, and it got so hot that it literally flew off the walls. If I turn over the stone, I could show you ashes and bubbling in the stone itself. Right over here. This is a stone that burnt on Tisha B'Av. Took me 20 minutes arguing with my insurance company to get them to allow it to come here tonight. I wanted you to see this. This is a stone that burnt on Tisha B'Av. And people ask me all the time, Tisha B'Av, how did things burn till the next day? It was mostly stone. Yes, it's limestone. Avnei Sid burns. Now, 9 years ago by Binyanei HaUma, the Convention Center Yerushalayim. They're making a new parking lot. And they find the military headquarters of Titus. And in this military headquarters, they find bricks. And on every single brick, it says L-E-G, Legion, X, 10th Legion of the Roman Army, F-R, Frentis Roma. What do you say in Nachim? That Yerushalayim was overrun by the Legionis, by the legions. The word legion is soldiers. Ach eshevet Levi loisifkoid, Rashi says in Chumash, kedai hu legion shel melech. Shevet Levi is their own legion. So this is an actual brick from the group of soldiers who destroyed the second base of Mikdash. And just in case you wanted to see what Titus actually looked like, I have a coin right here. Okay. I have a coin right here with a picture of Titus on it. And the back of the coin says Judea Capta. It's a woman sitting and crying. A tree behind her. The Judea is rubbed out on this one. You can see the word Capta. And this is what we say, Basioin is sitting and crying over the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. So this is actually what Titus looked like. And he was an emperor after his father died. And he minted coins. And this was a celebration of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. What we were crying about, they were celebrating. So hopefully this gives you a little bit of a perspective about the Churban of Bayis Rishon, about Bayis Sheni, and about Korban
Sefer. I do remember hearing that they melted down the candle of the Beis HaMikdash for gold or for coins.
Yeah, the Gemara in Bchara says that Hadrian and Trajan, two emperors of Rome, there was a silver shortage. You know, President Obama made a news conference 12 weeks ago, and he said that it cost the American government 1.8 cents to make a penny and 9 cents to make a nickel. So they're actually losing money. So Obama wants to change the metal that's being used. There was a silver shortage in the time of Hadrian and Trajan. So the Gemara in Bukhara, Daf Nun Amud Aleph, says what Hadrian and Trajan did is they took the gold and silver coins from the Beis HaMikdash, melted it down, and made their own coins out of it. And Bikshu Lignois Kol Kesev V'Zov Sheba Olam. They wanted to aser people using these gold and silver coins at Shematsu Pasik B'Yecheskel, till they found the Pasik in Yecheskel Bo Pritzim V'Chalu, and there's no Din Kedusha to the coins. Well, I have one of those coins that the Gemara is talking about. This is a silver coin with a picture of Hadrian on the coin with his name. And this was this was from the melted silver taken away from the Beis HaMikdash. Not my words. The Gemara in Bukhara is Daf Nun Amud Aleph. And there's no Din Kedusha to it. Just like there's no Din Kedusha to this broken piece of stone that looks like the Koisel. But the Koisel was never destroyed. That's why it has a Din Kedusha. This was destroyed, it has no Din Kedusha. And that's the difference. Questions? Well, I will tell you, if you want to see something really amazing, I've been working on a project secretly for 2 years. I sent 7 people undercover into Iran. And these 7 people went to the palace of Ahasuerus in Susa. I didn't know you were going to be here tonight. And we sent 7 people to Iran undercover for 2 years. They went and filmed the palace of Shushan, what it looks like today. We went into the Tehran Museum. The Gemara Megillah tells us that Ahasuerus died shortly after the story of Purim. It doesn't tell you how. There is an assassination tablet in the Tehran Museum. It describes how he was assassinated by his own son.
They don't even know who
Ahasuerus
was.
Yeah, we do. Xerxes II was that out of question.
It's a debate.
No debate. Go read my 2 DVDs, I go through why it's not a debate. Make a long story short, we went, we show you what Bahat was Sheshes. Sheshes marble, what's Bahat? We show you who the Ahasuerpanim were, who were the Pachos. We show you all the stuff. So, I have 2 DVDs that I gave out right before Purim, called The History of Purim. And I'm giving out now on every single one of the Yom Tovim, just like I told you tonight about Bayis Rishon and the Churban of the First Beis HaMikdash. You should be able to have a clarity But people shouldn't just go to shul and just know half stories or know kamsa bar kamsa. Kamsa bar kamsa is a detail in the story of Tisha B'Av. It's a detail in the story of Tisha B'Av. So much more that happened. Who were the bar yoinim? Who were the sikrim? Who was Yosefin? Was Yosefin a frum Jew? Was he a bar yoini? Who was a tzdaiki? Who was he exactly? All this I'm showing you on these new films I gave out. So I gave out, sorry about that. I gave out 8 new films since last year that covers Purim, 2 Tisha B'Av. I gave out Animals of the Talmud, volume number 3, where I climbed into the cages of some of the most dangerous animals in the world to demonstrate to kids many things Chazal say. So for example, you learn afilu nachash karach al gabi akevoy. So I climbed into the cage with a 210-pound python. And I wrapped them around my legs, like the Gemara describes. And I show you the difference between a nachash and a sarif. A sarif will kill you with his venom and his poison. A nachash, he'll squeeze you. But when he's on your legs, it's painful, but you can continue shmanasra. So then I wanted to show the kids that animals will sense if you're afraid of them or not. So I took a python and wrapped him around my neck. But I'm not afraid of him. Then I had a guy from Esha Torah came to me. He said, Rabbi Deutsch, if you answer me this question, I'm going to become a Shemesh Shabbos this week. I said, go. He says, I asked everybody this question. Nobody gave me an answer. I said, go. He says, it says that Nebuchadnezzar would ride down the streets of Babel on the back of a lion. He told me, that's impossible. I said, come back in 6 weeks. What's going to happen in 6 weeks? I took one of my wildlife guys who worked for me. I paid him $30,000 to climb into a cage with a lion, wrestle him to the ground, and take a ride on his back. The person became a Shemesh Shabbos. It's on my new DVD called Animals of the Talmud, Volume 3. So sometimes I'm inspired by the questions that I get to show you what Chazal said. Why couldn't Nebuchadnezzar ride down the back of a lion or the streets of Babel down with the back of a lion? Because he wasn't afraid of it. An animal will sense if you're afraid of it. If you're afraid of it, it will kill you. If you're not afraid of it, you can take a python and put it around your neck, it won't kill you. And I did it. To demonstrate this is what it is. Animals will sense if you have fear for them or not. So this is the new film that I gave out on Animals of the Talmud, Volume 3. Any questions?
So now we can learn McGill in English. No, right? The whole question was if we knew enough.
Well, there's still a few words we're not sure of, but most of them we do know.
If you got that one, I'm sure you got the other one.
So you mentioned about the Chorosh.
Okay, Tzinkatzar the Chorosh. Okay, it's a very fascinating thing. I have a coin in the museum, a Mordika coin. When the Beis Mikdash was destroyed the second time, Hadrian, when he killed Rabbi Akiva, by the way, Hadrian was the one who killed Rabbi Akiva. When he killed him in a sports stadium in Caesarea, Caesarea, that's where Rabbi Akiva was killed. And when Rabbi Akiva was killed, he asked Limud HaTorah. He renamed Yerushalayim from Yerushalayim to Ilia Kapitalia. He called it Ilia Kapitalia. And he minted a coin of himself on one side. I show it in the new film that's coming out tomorrow. And on the other side, you see him plowing Yerushalayim like a field. And this he did. This is the Kiyum HaNevuah of Tzirin Kesad HaTecharish. This is what Micha was talking about. That Yerushalayim will be plowed. You see, the Nevi Sheker thought that Eibishter will never destroy his own house. He'll never destroy his own Beis HaMikdash. And that's not true. And this is the big mistake that all of these people made. They thought they can do whatever they want. You know, the Eibishter would never destroy his own covenant. And the answer is no. Eibishter does it. Meichim Matzar, this is what he does.
Third base of the
Mikdash. What about
it? Destroyed
it.
Do you have any
remnants
to that?
Well, the third base, it's not a joke, because Shimon Bar Kochba started building the third base of the Mikdash. And the Mars.
Yeah,
sure.
What? Yeah, we believe in this.
Yeah. Well, started building the third base of the Mikdash.
Not you, everybody else.
He started building the third base of the Mikdash, but
a big carbon Pesach.
Yeah, he said that you can even have a carbon, you know, you can stop being Makif carbon Pesach without it. That's why the whole debate, if you invite me back another time, I want to talk to you about what the fight 100 years ago was about, whether or not we should start
recording the current day fights.
What's that?
The current day fights will shut the recording.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
What do you mean? Some safe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole parsha. It's a very interesting parsha about what happened with the Korban Pesach. People wanted to reestablish we should be Makor Korban Pesach. Why it was not done. And I will tell you a funny story that happened with Rabbi Yashiv. Shimon Peres once came to Rabbi Yashiv on Sukkos. Rabbi Yashiv is sitting in a sukkah, and Peres had some bad publicity, so what did he do? He ran to Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv is sitting in the sukkah, and he's sitting and learning, and Peres is sitting right next to him. He doesn't even see him. And finally, he picks up his head. And Shimon Peres says to Rabbi Yashiv, he says, "Tell me, is there anything that the state of Israel can do for you?" Rabbi Yashiv thinks, and he says, "You want to do something for me? Make sure to put police by around Har HaBayis on Erev Pesach, so nobody should go and be makor b'Korban Pesach." Story 22 years ago. This year, it was a group of people trying to go up onto Har HaBayis to be makor b'Korban Pesach. I once asked Rabbi Yashiv why he held you shouldn't be makor b'Korban Pesach. So Rabbi Yashiv said to me, he says, "Hayint, today is nishta shay letzim memeg yod sim memeg nish. It's not a question if you're allowed to. It's a shaylov al tizgar b'umas. If you're going to go today to do something that's just going to anger the goyim, and they're going to hurt one yid, or chas v'shalom kill a yid because of it, it's not worth the whole thing." Imagine Shimon Peres is sitting in Rabbi Yashiv's sukkah. Rabbi Yashiv's thinking about Klal Yisrael. I'll tell you one funny story I had with Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Now it's an amazing story. Actually, two stories. Can I tell you two stories?
Okay.
One story is, I was by Reb Chaim, and I was explaining to him that National Geographic this month wrote about the Living Torah Museum in the August issue of National Geographic magazine. In the iPad edition, they're talking about taxidermied animals. They put a big picture in it. So I was explaining to him what National Geographic is, how popular, how important it is. Hitzah Maisa, Reb Chaim was telling me, he says, "You have to make sure," told me this a while ago when I found out they were making the article. He said, "You have to make sure that if people come to the museum, they know you're not allowed to make the bracha baruch mashana habrius on a taxidermied animal because it's not alive." I heard it, I smiled, I thought it was a nice vart. I got on a plane, came back to the United States, and as I land, my wife calls me on her cell phone, She says, "I'm sorry to do this to you. You're coming off a flight, but a family from Baltimore made an appointment 6 weeks ago that they're coming in special to spend the day in the museum. I promised them you're going to give them a tour." I'm exhausted from the flight. All right, people came all the way from Baltimore. I have to do it. I gave them a tour in the Antiquities Museum. Then I took him over to the animals. And at the end of the tour, the father of this family from Baltimore walks over to me and asks me, "Tell me, am I allowed to make the bracha baruch mashana habrius?" I froze in my place. I thought about the Gemara and Pesachim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir was in Itzivain, and a guy wanted to go eat Korban Pesach every year, and then he came and told him, "Did you eat, get from the Aliyah?" And he came, and they send him Shalchu Lechachamim, and they asked him, "So you're sitting in Itzivain, and your nets are spread all over your Yerushalayim. Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky is sitting in Bnei Brak, and he worries that a yid should, in Brooklyn, should chas v'shalom make a bracha levatol." One other story. The divers, next time you come, I'll show it to you. We found an anchor of a boat, a massive anchor of a boat. It weighs 350 pounds. It's now in the museum. It's full of coral as we took it out of the water. Kitzar Maisa. So those who learn Baba Basra know that the Gemara says, "Hamoicha svina l'chaver," a person sells a boat to his friend. What does he have to include in the sale of the boat? The oigin, ayin vav gimel nun, ugna. Ugna is an anchor. So I decided I want to make Reb Chaim happy. So I took this massive anchor, and it took us 12 people to carry it up to Reb Chaim's upstairs in his house. And I put it on Reb Chaim's desk. Reb Chaim looks at me and he says to me, "The vase, you know, that the word aguna means she's anchored down to her husband." I never heard it from anyone before. So I'm saying it to shame. I'm replying to it. That's where the word aguna comes from. She's anchored down to her husband. Why do you need an anchor? If a person sells a boat, you sell a beautiful big boat, and Hurricane Sandy's going to come with a little rope tying it to the dock, you're not going to have anything left. You need an anchor. That's why the Gemara in Bava Basra says it's a chelik of the sail of the boat. You need to have the anchor in order to protect your investment of what you're basically doing. So, I started speaking this morning at 9 a.m., and now it's Baruch Hashem 9:52 p.m., so I think I'll close for tonight.